You're like, what's the angle on TikTok? I don't know what exact word you use.
Probably end goal or
like,
something like
what's your
that.
end goal of
Yeah.
doing these TikToks?
See, me asking that question is me being in LA too long, where I feel like everything is
Yes.
so calculated and you gotta, like, why is she doing that? What's the plan?
Hey, babies. Welcome to the Dr. Beauty Podcast hosted by me, Dr. Anna Guanche. I'm so excited you're here. We plan to educate, inspire, and entertain you. This podcast is not just about beauty. It's about lifestyle, inspiration, life hacks, and of course, beauty. Babies, I'm here with Ashley. Ashley Barrett. He is a good friend of mine and a celebrity and fashion photographer. And he also does lifestyle shots for me. You guys have seen it on my Instagram. And if you haven't, where have you been? He does almost all of my photography. I love spending time with you, even just on the shoots, because you've got this great energy and you bring out the best. Like you make me feel at ease. So I'm assuming
Well,
that's
thank you.
probably one of your secrets, right?
I think, yeah, that's, I mean, probably one of my strengths as a photographer is that I like people and like to be around them. So that
Yeah.
helps.
So you've photographed some really famous people,
Yeah, like Dr. Anna.
like other than Dr. Anna. You guys like some really famous people, like Ariana Grande,
Yeah.
Olivia Culpo.
Yeah.
I think you photographed her before I met her, maybe.
I think, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because I've known Olivia
She's
for
great.
7 or 8 years now.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, beautiful. One of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in real
Yeah.
life.
You guys have a similar energy too, by the way.
We do.
Like very just fun and yeah,
Well, that's the highest
positive.
of compliments.
Yeah.
She's going to be on this
Oh,
podcast
cool.
soon, so hopefully we'll see. You guys can listen in and see if we sound similar, right? And then Hilary Duff
Hilary Duff, yeah, work with her
and
a
Demi
lot.
Lovato. These are some big names. So, how do you feel when you're on set with these people? Do you feel nervous at all, or how do you approach it?
Only with you, really.
I'm the only one that makes me
yeah.
nervous.
I think early on in my career I did, but just like I'm assuming with any career, once you kind of get in there and get used to it and put some mileage behind you, it
It's
starts
just
becoming no big deal.
funny that he said that because my PR agent introduced me to Ashley and we did our first shoot and I got very nervous about it. I was very nervous about it and I almost canceled maybe 4 or 5 times because I was like, why would you want to shoot me? I don't understand. And I felt super weird about it. And then after I met Ashley, I was like, oh, okay. He doesn't make you feel nervous. He doesn't, not intimidating. And yet he gets the most amazing shots because I think he puts you at ease and you're relaxed. And he obviously is a magician with the lighting and all that
Well,
stuff. So
and those are my favorite shoots, by the way. Because I remember when she called me and she talked to me about you and she said, look at her Instagram and see. And at the time, you were one of the first people that I had worked with in regards to like creating content for
social
social
media.
media. And so she was like, look at her Instagram. And I'm like, this is, so I'm just going to photograph content for her. Like I'm used to doing it for magazines or record labels or product line or whatever. And as soon as I saw your Instagram, I was like, oh wow, she's fun. I want to do it for sure. And
Love it.
since then I'd started doing that for,
For other people, right?
because that's kind of become, that's what people do now. And those are my favorite shoots now because it's just like I'm so into people and collaborating and that kind of environment where, sometimes you and I will like say, let's meet here and we'll do a bunch of pictures here, or sometimes I come to your home or wherever, and it's just us. We're
Yeah.
talking, having fun. Sometimes your family's there.
Yeah.
It's not like 40 people on set and
Right.
ladders and booms and all this chaos, and then trying to have some sort of connection where you can get a really interesting photo. Yeah,
It's more
it's
open-ended, it's
fun.
more free. Part of it is like our first shoot, we had a stylist and she's very sweet, wonderful. And then there was a hair person, I think. And yeah. as the person being photographed, I felt more nervous on that one with a lot of people around. I mean, I don't mind a lot of people around in general, but there was something about it that then subsequently we did a shoot together. It was just me and you.
Yeah.
And clothes that I picked out. And it just worked out for me. Like, I think that obviously you would do anything that somebody needed, but it's just open-ended, like whatever seems to feel right in this location right now in this light and whatever. And if you leave it a little bit open to creativity, it just mm-hmm. comes out magical.
When I look at my portfolio and I think about like the best shots I've ever taken in my career, it's almost always like an environment where it's just myself, the subject, maybe one other person.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's because I'm more free in that setting or they are more free or combination or what, but it's exactly like you said. It's like, we can be spontaneous. We can be like, oh, this isn't working. Let's go over here. And
right.
it's just rolling with it. Yeah.
Sometimes you just hop in the car, change in the back seat, hop in the car. Let's go down the street. Let's go up the hill.
Sometimes you hop on top of the car.
Sometimes I get on top of the car, which you guys will eventually see. And then I worry about denting the car because I'm a big girl, you know. I'm not petite, but yeah, my poor Tesla. No dents, though.
It's a beauty.
No dents.
Fastest car in the world.
Fastest car in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing about it is I don't really use it like at its top speed, but I do get
no
to
does.
Speed very quickly.
Yeah.
Like you get to speed
yeah.
in seconds. Like you can press the gas and be at 60 miles an hour in 3 seconds.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's amazing.
It actually feels... It. When you, as a surfer, when you like paddle into a bigger wave or a wave with power and you feel like the push, that's what I feel when I'm sitting in your Tesla and you hit the gas.
That's G-forces.
Yeah. But I don't even have to put on a wetsuit. It's great.
That's right. So surfing is your passion and you do a lot of surfing photography as well, right? Or
yeah,
that's more of a hobby?
That's definitely just a hobby. I love shooting like beachscapes and... Not necessarily like I don't love shooting surfers in the water, but I just love that environment. Like every time I surf, I almost always like bring a little camera and before or after I go get a couple snaps on the beach.
Yeah. That is something that is like almost like a moving meditation, right? For people that surf, you just kind of get out of your head while you're in the water.
Yeah.
And just kind of like that whatever happens, not whatever yeah. happens, happens, but you're so focused on what you're doing that you can't like worry about anything else. Like you,
yeah,
I would imagine. I don't surf.
It is the definition of living in the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't, when you're on a wave, you can't really think about the upcoming meeting you have or where you just came from. You're in the now for sure.
In that moment. Yeah.
And it's funny because I am such a surfer and I surf all the time and it's become like a huge part of me, but I didn't grow up surfing cause I grew up in Denver.
Uh-huh. That's right.
So I picked up surfing later in life, but what's so weird is, my mom, sent me some crayon drawings that I had done when I was like, I mean, really little, I think maybe like 6-7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always a surfer in a wave. I don't even think I had been to an ocean at that time. So it was almost like...
It's somewhere within you.
This is getting super hippy-dippy, but it was in my soul, yeah.
So let me tell you something really crazy that I've been listening to, because I'm always listening to audiobooks, and I'm trying to remember the guy's name who talks about that we've had lives before. Who's the famous one? Something from the Masters. Messages from the Masters is the name of the first book he wrote.
Okay.
And basically... It says that we come with like a genetic memory and we have visited a number of times. And like he'll hypnotize people and they'll remember things in another life that happened and they will connect with actual history and it'll be something. And maybe that person's spirit was there. A lot of times it'll be in their same family.
Yeah.
But one of the interesting things that he brought up one time is that this little kid had an animal die. I can't remember if it was a cat or a dog. And then he put butter all over the cat and wrapped it in leaves. And it was a kid that was too small for anyone to ever have taught him about embalming or mummifying or anything like that.
Wow.
So the theory is that you may remember things from another life that you knew, like a skill that you knew in another life. Like maybe from Egypt, when his ancestors were there, he learned that you put the oils on the skin and then you wrap them in leaves and that's how you embalm. Because how would this three-year-old, four-year-old kid know to put butter all over
this
cat or whatever? Like, and so his theory is like, we also have memories from other lives. So maybe you had a surfing memory or something about surfing was in your genetic memory or something.
How I would love it if in a past life I was some like Hawaiian surfing legend.
Maybe.
Big wave hunter and.
Hang loose.
Meanwhile, you're like,
it's possible.
Stay away from the beach. Put on your sunscreen.
Yeah, me too. I'm, you know what? I ask him all the time. Look how fair skinned he is, you guys, if you're watching this on YouTube. Very fair skinned. So you got to be careful about sunscreen.
No, I am.
Yeah.
I am now. I was probably. I mean, like all of us, when I was younger, I wasn't too cautious, but.
So, I mean, like with surfing, it's really hard because you're not just getting the sun from the sun, you're getting the reflection, and then there's water, so it's rinsing off the sunscreen the whole time, so you just kind of have to reapply.
And it's salt water, so it's drying your skin out on top of it.
It's drying out your skin,
it's basically like everything you don't want people doing, pretty much, but.
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much you do everything I didn't want you to do, but it's okay.
And somehow we're still friends.
Somehow we still get along. No, but I think just by looking at your skin, I can usually tell by looking at someone's skin whether they've been taking care of it or not. So I could tell you've been wearing sunscreen.
Thank you.
Because I do have people that try to lie to me and I just die laughing. I'm like.
No, I coat it on.
Yeah.
Like I should show you a picture of me when I'm surfing. It's like the, because it's always
zinc.
Like zinc.
Yeah.
And because that's the only, I can't seem to find one that's not zinc that's actually like stays on and is good. But I mean, it's like. Ghost face. I mean,
good.
Yeah. So,
mama's happy.
Yeah. Good.
No, I mean, honestly, you guys, especially if you're in the water, you're doing water sports and you're in the sun, you have to reapply at least every 2 hours because we've discovered that there's no such thing as waterproof. And in fact, the FDA made it illegal to call sunscreen waterproof. It is now called water resistant and it has to have the minute timing on it. So, the minutes are maximum now is 80 minutes. So there's no such thing as waterproof. Obviously it makes sense, right? Like you can't just expect something you put on your skin to stay on no matter what you do to it for how many hours, you know? So that's important. Also babies and young people that you guys are raising need to wear their sunscreen because most of your sunscreen happens before age 15.
Yeah.
So, and I know so you I guess have it was, some cute little fair skinned babies.
I do. And we lather them up
big
time. And the funny thing is now, since COVID, I started playing golf all the time too.
Oh.
New hobby.
Yeah, my hobby too.
Yeah.
I'm a golf widow. I'm almost officially a golf widow.
What is that?
Golf widow means your husband loves golf so much that you almost never see him.
That's amazing. I've never heard that now.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, now you can see.
That's funny.
There's the lessons and then there's the like the 9 holes, 18 holes, and then there's the like, impromptu ones. And then like I ended clinic early today, so I'm going to go hit some balls.
Yep.
And so, you know, but I'm glad. I love it when someone has a passion for something. Yeah. But anyway, you were saying you got into golf.
It's funny because, and now I'm so used to having just surfed my whole life. I'm used to just putting sunscreen on my face or on my neck or whatever, but you know, wear a wetsuit so you don't need it. And then the first couple rounds playing golf, I was like, I'd come home, I lathered up my face, but I'd come home and I'd be like, my arms are burnt. So
what about sun shirts? You can wear a sun shirt.
Wow, that's like really committing to looking a certain way though when you're playing golf. Maybe I should.
You can wear a sun shirt and a tilly hat.
I'm too hot. I sweat too much. It'd just be I gotta breathe.
I know. You know, the two sports that you've just mentioned are the two where I see all those patients all the time for skin cancer excisions.
I know.
All the time. I'm not trying to scare you, but I'm just saying.
No, you don't need to. I'm already scared.
Because golfing, you're standing there and the rays are just penetrating your skin. I mean, it's not like you're even moving. You're just allowing the UV
to soaking it in.
Just soak into your skin. And honestly, I want to try golf, but like, believe it or not, you probably believe it, the main deterrent is that you have to be in the sun for so long.
Yeah.
And you should be in the sun. I always say before 10 a.m. and after, let's say, 4 p.m. is the safest time. Mm-hmm. And no matter which tee time you would get for golf, you're going to end up crossing over that the bad time to be out in the sun, I feel like.
True, like, but...
They should have night golf.
They do. A couple like courses. Real night golf? Like stadium lit. Yeah, there's a course down close to the airport that has that. And I actually, since I have two little kids, I can't like... be golfing all day. So yeah. I started waking up at like 5 a.m. Teeing off 5:30, just play nine holes. I'm done before I take my daughter to school. And there's no beating sun at that point. So
5:30 tee time. Who's gonna wake up that early? No way.
Someone crazy like me. Yeah.
You insane. So one of the reasons I had you on here is A, because I'm a big fan of yours, and B, because I know that you're around beautiful women all the time, and it is the Dr. Beauty podcast. And even though we don't only talk about beauty, I ask every single one of my guests, like, what's your definition of beauty? And from the perspective of being a photographer, print photography and celebrities and all that stuff, what is your definition of beauty?
For me, it would be, it would be kindness. Which sounds hokey, but
no,
I've kind of gone through phases in my career where, like, you know, when I first started shooting, I was only working with like young models, and I was obsessed with like interesting beauty, having to do with like kind of that supermodel look.
Right.
And then as a photographer, like, you kind of fall into the making observations, like understanding like the what would be the classic like numbers or definition of beauty, like are there how wide
like the golden
set their
ratio.
Eyes are,
yeah, yes.
the distance from their lip to the bottom of their nose, yeah. Like things like you're taught a lot of those things,
yeah.
And now at this point, it's like the most beautiful people to me are the ones who are just have like a great vibe,
yeah.
They're kind, you know.
It's so interesting how a lot of us, no matter what specialty we do, go from like the cookie cutter historical definition of scientific sort of way, and we start to realize that a lot of it's just like energy. So I had said this on a previous podcast where when I went to medical school, I was a pure scientist. I didn't believe in like all this esoteric stuff. And when people talk about it, I'd be like, what are you talking about? You know, it's science. We need like studies. We need like facts. And there was a lot to memorize in med school. It was very factual. And there was a the numbers and the ratios. And then I started realizing every room I go into has a different energy. Every patient that I see, besides taking care of their skin problem or their beauty issue, whatever, that there's an energy exchange. And so I stopped being quite as rigid on that. And so it's that same idea. People ask me all the time, what's the golden ratio? And I know all the numbers for the golden ratio. So like one third, yeah. And one fifth across the face. And then there's the distance between the eyes and the pupils and all this symmetrical, the rules of being beautiful. But then I realized there's so many beautiful people that don't fall under that category. And if you chase that, you're not getting beauty. It comes out weird when you try to chase the golden ratio, right? And so I realized that it's not about that. There's like a million ways to be beautiful, but you have to learn through some sort of structure.
Yeah.
And so there's this quote that says like, learn the rules like the pros, like a pro, so you can break them like an artist.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, so that's what you're talking about to me. That's what I'm hearing, that like, you're like, it was supposed to be like this. And then I realized there's like a whole nother layer of beauty.
Yeah, because I can remember early on in my career, sitting with a client or an ad agency or whatever, and going through models and being like, oh, well, really focused on the physicality of them, and wanting to have all those ratios perfect so that you could get a great photo. Now when I sit down with a client to do a casting, I'm like, well, I've worked with her before and she's just incredible. Like, she's so awesome and fun. The vibe's good. We'll get great stuff.
Right.
Because those ratios, they're just numbers, and that doesn't bring a photograph to life. You know,
right.
It might look interesting for a second, but I'd rather have someone whose energy just, when you take a photo and you look at it, you're like, wow, that person is incredible.
And that's your talent, is that you're able to capture the energy, not just the 2D photo, but the vibe and the person's like personality and energy. So.
I do think I've become so much less technical as my career has gone on, and more about capturing a moment. Mm-hmm. And capturing someone's kind of personality.
Do you ever get someone who you feel like isn't doing the thing? You're just in a struggle,
almost. It's kind of tough?
Yeah.
It almost always ends up being great.
Yeah.
It might just take a little bit longer for that person to get comfortable.
To be at ease, right? Yeah.
And I was about to say for me to get them to be comfortable, but that's not always, it's a lot of times that's not what I'm doing. It's just in their own time or the right setting or whatever. So if I I'm doing like a location portrait or something and someone's not a model, or a lot of times film actors, TV actors they hate being photographed, mm-hmm. because they're used to they don't like the still camera.
Right.
So they can be very uncomfortable, and it's a matter of just like letting them kind of find their comfort zone.
I've been amazed at how many very famous celebrities can be nervous. Like they can be very, and the expectation out in the world or at large is that they're going to be very comfortable in all situations, but they can be very nervous. And, in my case, it would be about procedures or even just an office visit to hear the options. But in some cases, it's like something that you're expecting. We kind of expect superhuman qualities from our celebrities, because a lot of times, especially actors, are portrayed as a brilliant genius who's like, it's an old term, but like MacGyver, who can do anything, and then they don't, they can't, but
yeah.
They are expected to. Like
yeah.
Anyone who meets them thinks of them in terms of the role that they play or the exceptional intelligence or whatever they have, and then they're people and they have vulnerabilities. So you have to kind of ease them in and make sure that everybody's on the same page. And for me, I just blabber on and then I get comfortable. So I don't think they see me as anything intimidating or scary. But
yeah,
I feel like when I do a shoot with you, you're always asking more questions. You're asking questions, and you kind of like draw someone out, like make them like chill, like make them,
which by the way, easy. Is not like a premeditated thing. It's just like,
oh, it's just your way.
I'm just, like I said, I just like people.
Yeah.
And especially if it's, I mean, you and I gelled right away and I find you so interesting. So of course I'm going to have a lot of questions, and then maybe by us just talking and you got comfortable.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I mean, I was an actor for a long time before I became a photographer, and so I think having that history and being on the other side of the camera, I know what it's like, and I know probably the things not to say and do to make someone feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And I also understand, I have empathy for, you know, I mean, I remember being on set one time, we're shooting a TV pilot, the whole time I was completely not nervous at all. And then I think it was like the last day, we were on set for like 2 weeks. The last day they had a stills photographer come on and it was to shoot, you know, promo material.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly I was just like locked up. I mean, I was like, okay, so I'm stand here and what do I do with my hands? Like things that you don't ask if you're
comfortable,
if you're playing a role or if you're doing something with a motion camera. So I think that has helped me in my career for sure. And
to relate and
yeah.
What kind of acting did you do? I guess I did remember that you told me that before. Yeah.
I did like a lot of bad TV.
Bad TV. That's
shows.
What you said last time.
Yeah. Mostly bad TV.
What's
shows.
Bad TV for our listening audience?
Like all the, do you remember like Silk Stockings? It was on the USA Network. It was like the kind of like,
wait, was it a soap opera?
It wasn't even racy back then, but it was like kind of like the sexy like
really?
Nighttime shows. So I did some of that, and
wow,
And then a lot of like little indie films. I was in Bring It On, the first one with Kirsten Dunst, the cheerleader movie. And I played the high school quarterback who like makes fun of all the male cheerleaders.
That's not like you in real life at all.
No.
That's so funny.
I know.
That's why it's called acting. Huh?
I played a bully, basically.
You played a bully.
Yeah.
Oh, that's probably why you stopped acting. You're like, this is for the... No, I'm just kidding. So do you ever wish to go back to that?
Does
that... do you... You don't?
No.
You don't feel like once it's in you, it's always in you?
That may be the case. And it might... but I have another outlet for that. Like, I also write... Uh-huh. And so I get a lot of whatever I got from acting out in my writing now.
I see.
And I think my time as an actor was actually like training me to become a photographer, become a writer. I look back at it as it was just kind of a stepping stone to what I do now.
Well, I mean, I probably imagine it's easier to write a screenplay when you can imagine being the actor who has to say these lines or in a situation where these lines are being said. You've already had to memorize and say lines in situations, then you can imagine probably more easily how to write them.
Absolutely.
But what are you writing? Oh, I don't know. We can't know. Everybody who comes on here has a bunch of secrets. It's like every guest we have is like, I tell you, but I have to kill you. And I tell them the only reason you're on this is because we want to know all your secrets.
No. I only mostly write screenplays.
Yeah.
And all different genres. For me, it's just it's not a career. It's just a passion. I love to do it.
Did you write me into your script yet or no?
No, but I definitely, I mean, you would be such a great character for sure. We should actually plot that out and think about making a little series or something based on you. That'd be cool.
That's funny. I have a few patients that are, I have one patient who's a writer. She's writing a sitcom and she goes, every time I think of this funny character, I'm picturing you. And I go, oh, that's awesome. That's the highest compliment. I said, you know, if it ever gets picked up, I'm happy to play the role.
Yeah.
Funny. I mean, I don't know if I can, but if I can, I'll definitely do it.
I mean, there's a lot of good storylines in what you do, for sure.
Yeah. And then we had Eva LaRue on, and she was talking about something she's looking at producing, and there's a doctor in it. I was like, I'll be the doctor in it.
There you go.
So I'm trolling. You guys, are you listening?
I will definitely make something happen with you for sure.
That'd be funny. Yeah, you should write something for me. That'd be hilarious.
Who knows what? You never know, like, what, when people get together and start working, you never know what the end result is truly supposed to be. Maybe it goes far beyond your Instagram. And
yeah, that's true. And my podcast. The one thing I love about this podcast is that I'm actually doing what I do in the room. Like if you work with me, you know that I always am interested in all my patients and I talk to them, ask them questions, and I'm doing their procedure and I'm diagnosing their condition, but I'm also very interested in people, kind of like you were just saying.
Yeah.
And I'm always like curious and like, how did you do that? Like whether they're a business owner or they're a producer or they're a mom, like how do you do this? I'm always trying to learn from people. And so I'm like, the podcast thing just fits me because I love to sit down and talk to you, and I've known you for a long time, but now I know more things about you because when you formally sit down with somebody to have a conversation, you start to understand things about them or know things about them like a little bit more deeply.
Yeah.
But then also you get to share it. Like most of the stuff I hear in my exam room, I can't share. So,
right.
So this is a great platform for that. And it also, it's very enriching and it's a way of connecting with people. Like you said, and you never know, you start working at something, you're like, hey, we should do that. And then next thing you know, we have our own show. And next thing you know, we weren't winning Academy Awards and Emmy Awards and all these other awards. And next thing you know, no, I'm just kidding.
I'm like, keep going. Were you always, when you were younger, were you...
was I what?
Always so inquisitive and interested in people? Or is this... For some reason, I have this vision of you developing that in college. I don't know why. Like, I picture you...
I honestly developed it probably later than college.
Okay.
I had a really unhappy childhood. And I was, and then I left home really young, and then I was always working. But during the time I was working, I was always happy, like bubbly, waiting tables, whatever, tutoring. I was always energetic and happy, but not as inquisitive about people to learn from them.
Yeah.
And I was sort of in survival mode. And then when I went to med school, that's like its own survival mode. Like, so much to learn. And
yeah,
it really, I'm glad I went to medical school. I'm so happy and lucky. But it doesn't leave space for any creativity. Because I originally wanted to write. When I was like 11 or 12, I started out having a desire to write. And my dad was like, that's not practical. You're not going to, nobody makes money writing. Like, you need to be doctor, lawyer, engineer was the thing. And to some extent, he's not wrong. I have no regrets. I'm very happy that I did what I did. But during med school, you're so busy cramming all this information into your brain at such a rapid pace that you can't do the creative part or the getting to know people part the way you would want to. And it was after starting practice, after the initial couple years of becoming stable as a practice, that I started having the freedom to go, I already know how to do this procedure, like the back of my hand. I don't even have to concentrate on procedures as much because it's like another part of my brain. It's a procedural memory part. And so now there's like another segment of me that just is there to talk to you and, you know, distract you from any pain that you might be feeling, but also be totally interested in you. And the other part of me is that procedural part that just automatically goes. Like, I know where to go. I know how much to put where. I don't have to, like, calculate in my mind. What am I doing? And how do you do this? And all that. It's just automatic.
Yeah.
So once that automatic thing kicked in, like when you drive to your house and you don't know, even remember the drive.
Yep. You're on autopilot.
Once that kicked in, then I had that extra bandwidth to chat with people and ask them questions. And also, I am easily bored. So the thing that keeps my life interesting is the humans.
Totally.
Like not doing the same like thing over and over, but the humans that are involved in the process are what interests me, you know?
And look, now it's come full circle. I mean, you wanted to be a writer. You obviously wanted to be creative.
Yeah.
Your dad was like, be a doctor, lawyer, whatever. You became a doctor. You did all that. You're at the top of your game in the doctor world, and now you have a podcast and you're TikToking and Instagram. Like you have kind of the best of both worlds.
Like allowed to like explore the creative side more now and the fun, silly side. But now that I did the work for a long time. So
you earned
it. It's a little controversial sometimes with some doctors don't like the TikTok thing.
Yeah.
But
that's, I get it. Just old school people.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, but I have to decide, you know, what makes sense for me. And my TikTok, I've told you before, because one time you guys actually sat down, we were waiting for the right light. So when we go on a shoot together, he has to wait for the exact right lighting. I mean, not exact right, but like, right? Am I wrong? Am I wrong?
I'm just picturing me like sitting there like watching the sun waiting.
No. He's not watching the sun, but like, we'll be like, why don't we sit here for a minute and we'll you know, maybe have a snack or do something and wait because it's like not the pretty sunlight, whatever. And then basically, what did you ask me? Because this is when I first started doing TikToks. And you were like, so what's the angle on TikTok? I don't know what exact word you use. Like,
probably end goal or something.
Like, what's your end goal of doing these TikToks? And my feeling on the TikToks is I don't have an end goal. For once in my life, because I spent so many years surviving and trying to like do this and establish my reputation and do this, I don't have an end goal. I just wanted to do it. I think it's fun.
It's fun.
Yeah. And so, and yet doing all those TikToks just for fun increased my Instagram following by about 40,000 followers. Mm. And so even it kind of taught me a lesson. Like, not everything you do has to be like, financially driven or I don't know. You can just go after something because that's what makes you laugh and that's what makes it fun for you. And then all of a sudden all this good benefit comes from it too.
Yeah. See, me asking that question is me being in LA too long where I feel like everything is so calculated and you got to like, why is she doing that? What's the plan? Maybe there's no plan. Maybe you're just having fun with it.
There was no plan.
I'm too jaded. That's the problem.
We were just talking about LA people just now. And then the thing about it is, you're right. Like, a lot of times in LA, people don't just say hi to you like they do in the South, for example, or even in Colorado. Like, people are just kind and say hello to you. But I feel like in LA, sometimes you feel like if somebody says hello or asks you something, they always have an agenda.
Yeah.
There's a reason they ask you.
Like, what are they about to sell
doing.
Me?
Oh. You know, and so now we're all like, everybody in LA seems to be like a little bit standoffish, and not everybody, you guys, but like a lot. So
it's so funny. My mother-in-law, every time she comes to town, she's like, she'll go to like Target or some store, and she'll come back and she'll go, people are just so nice here. I'm like, here? What experience are you having here that's making you feel that way? She's from Mississippi.
That is funny. Mississippi people are way nicer sense of like saying hello.
Yeah. She lives in Florida now, but I mean, she comes from like Southern hospitality. Yeah. And she just thinks people in LA are so nice. I'm like,
oh, I love that.
I do too. I just wish I could pick up on that.
Well, it's funny because I complain about my neighbors all the time because I like to say hi to everybody and a lot of them just ignore me. But one time Ashley's in the car and we're just going up the hill to get the better light. And...
always going up the hill to get the better light.
For whatever reason, while Ashley was in the car, every single neighbor waved. Never wave. He goes like, wow, you have a really nice neighborhood. Everybody says hello. And I was like, he doesn't know that every day I complain about that. When I'm walking the dogs, I'm like, how come people can't just say hello to you or say hi back?
Yeah.
But when he was in the car, and we were only in the car for like 5 minutes, but like every neighbor said hello, and you were mentioning everybody's so nice. I'm like, I didn't have the heart to tell you it's actually not normally like that. But maybe there's a look on your face.
Maybe we were bringing that.
You said your mom. Is it your mom or your grandma?
My mother-in-law.
Your mother-in-law. Maybe she has like this smile. Or of course, everyone's wearing masks now.
Yeah.
Or something. Why people, you never know why people are... nice to you, drawn to you a little more. It's usually what you're putting out there somehow, right?
I agree. And I also think that maybe what she's experiencing, this could make more sense, is people seem happier here because the lifestyle in California is lends to that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things I don't like about LA, but we have great weather. You can do so many fun things here.
Right.
There is like a lightness of being here. So maybe she's picking up on that.
Yeah.
Not so much people being polite. Who knows?
I mean, I lived in Minnesota. I lived in Louisiana. And this is the only place you live where you don't check the weather.
Right.
Like, the weather doesn't determine much of anything, really. You do everything every day. You don't go, let's check the weather. And when I lived in Minnesota for like 6 years, and everybody was always talking about the weather.
Yeah.
Like in the elevator, in the morning, in the evening, what's the weather tomorrow? What was the weather like this morning? Wow, check out the weather. I was like, oh my God, that's all we talk about here. So I would be like, I got to get out of here. Because like, I grew up in California, so I don't have that perception of that's a great conversation piece for me. I don't care.
I lived in Minnesota for 6 months.
Oh,
and
you did?
Yeah, and I mean, as soon as the clouds lifted and the roads defrosted, I was out of there.
Oh my God. I mean, you left at the good time then.
Yeah. Then it got beautiful.
Yeah, that's when you left. The first snow is beautiful and the like 4th of July. And then everything in between is like, it's either hot, humid, you're getting bitten up, or it's freezing.
Yeah.
Like so cold. One time I was getting gas from my car and my nostrils froze shut. Took a breath in really fast.
Yeah.
Minus 20 degrees with the wind chill. I mean, I would put my fingers on the steering wheel and they would freeze.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how I got through 6 years of it, actually. I still have some good friends from Minnesota and I did my residency there. So kudos to you people who live there, but I only visit if like there's a major life event, like a wedding or something like that.
Yeah, I'm too soft for that place.
Very thin blood. But anyway, so I think it's interesting because going back to the fact that I ask people what their definition of beauty is here, and then you said kindness, and a lot of people say an energy or something like that, and yet a lot of us are trying to fit into an ideal of beauty or an age group or something like that. But even when you ask men what their definition of beauty is, it doesn't end up being that sort of external a set of features that we all like have a preconceived notion that is accepted beauty, you know? So, I mean, I don't know if we should be shifting what we think, or is it that you guys are just saying what you think you should say? Or because I've had like at least half and half male and female guests. And I
You're saying the men say that and the...
Yeah, the men and the mostly everyone. But definitely men will say something other than external. Like, they don't say like the features that they would... Physical features that they would think is beautiful, but instead like an energy, a light, like, you know, that kind of thing. And yet there are people spending much of their time being concerned about external appearances, and I know because that's what I do for a living, and trying to fit an ideal. The only way I can wrap my head around it is if they fit their own ideal better, then that light comes out in a different way because of confidence, like because they feel unleashed, like to be their best self and laugh out loud and do some of the things they want to do because they feel like they look good.
Well, so, confidence is, yeah, absolutely attractive for sure, obviously. But you know, for myself, I'm someone who I don't care that much how I look.
I knew you were going to say that.
I really don't. Do all the guys on the podcast say that?
Oh, no.
I mean, my wife like jokes that I bring like three outfits to vacation and like a stick of deodorant. Like, I mean, she only just recently convinced me to start using a moisturizer. So I just, and I should care more.
Right. No. I don't think, I'm not telling you should care more. I'm just telling you what I've observed. And I'm talking about beauty. I'm saying the men describing what they think is beautiful in a woman, for example. Mm-hmm. They almost never will mention a feature. It would always be like an energy or a personality trait.
Yeah.
And yet a lot of women are trying to reach an ideal of a certain appearance because they want to be beautiful.
Right.
So that's what's interesting to me on this podcast that I've learned, because I think we're on episode, like, what number is this? I'm not going to tell you what number it is. It's a secret. But I've done like over 12 episodes, and basically it's the same kind of concept. So maybe we're chasing the wrong things is what I'm thinking as far as ideals of beauty and things like that. Or like my other guest said, sometimes your definition of beauty changes, like when you're a teenage boy versus a college age boy versus a, you know, middle-aged man.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a different shift in what you used to think was beautiful, and then you start to realize, I don't give a crap about that. I'm more concerned about like personality or whatever it is that you said
100%,
earlier.
Yeah. That is for me, that's just the maturation process. Like, and if in terms of like physicality, if you asked 21-year-old me what I thought was attractive,
right,
and you asked 31-year-old me, you would get wildly different answers.
Mm-hmm.
Because that time frame, because my tastes had changed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in terms of what I thought was physically beautiful. And now, it is much more about an energy and a confidence, I guess. That's so cliche to say, but it's true. And if you like nailed me down and said, what is like a physical attribute that you find so attractive? I'd say a smile. So that's still an energy. It's not.
Yeah, in a way, right?
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But I do think that probably, especially for men, like, hopefully.
They grow up.
Hopefully.
And they're looking for something.
Yeah. Because if I hadn't grown up, I'd be terrified of. Me now.
Of me now. Yeah, that's true. And I was also thinking, since you've been around stunningly gorgeous women who are models.
Yeah.
And you see. It's one thing to look at them in a magazine or a 2D or whatever, or the final print. And it's another thing to experience a day with this person.
Yeah.
So maybe that gives you, I don't know, I'm putting words in your mouth, but maybe that gives you like an insight. Like,
it's so true. And early on in my career, I had like, I lived in this house with three other roommates, all guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all just like surf rats, just surfing every day, and I was starting my career as a photographer. And so I'd go shoot a model and come home, and I'd be like editing the photos, and one of my roommates would come in and be like, "Dude, who is that? She is so hot." And as time went on, I just didn't even see that anymore.
Right.
I was looking at the photograph. I was looking at all the elements to it. I was looking at what she was, if I was seeing,
exuding,
you know, who she is coming through the, I wasn't seeing hot, sexy,
right,
any of those things. And the longer I've been doing what I do, that has lessened even more. And the funny thing is, at one point in my career, I had this weird revelation. I was like, if I showed a friend of mine, a male friend of mine, a photo of a model or an actress or someone I had photographed, and they said, "Oh my God, she's so hot," or "she's so sexy," or whatever, I immediately didn't like that photo. Because
why?
Because it appealed to me, it felt like at the time that it appealed to a very specific like dude. And then around
banal.
That time, what's that?
Banal.
Yeah.
Like not the level you're looking for.
Yeah. And around that time, a couple people had reached out to me to do photos, and they thought that I was a woman.
Well, yeah, because your name is Ashley.
I have a girl's name. and then when we started talking and they said that, they were like, "Oh, well, your name, but also just the way you photograph women." They said they were seeing kind of like a feminine perspective on beauty.
Right.
That to me was like, felt like the best compliment, and it made me go, "Oh, that's how I want to photograph people from now on."
Right.
Of course, I want a photograph to, if the subject I'm shooting wants to be sexy, wants to embody that, I want it to, the photo to project that, but I want it to be, I'd like it to be sexy to a woman as well.
Right.
Does
not
that make
just
sense?
I 100% get what you're saying. It's like that gratuitous, sexy, I'll see young influencers in my office that have their pages, and then some know how to be very sexy but chic and have sort of a variance in what they wear. Like sometimes they're fully dressed, sometimes they're wearing boots, sometimes they're not, you know. And then there's the other ones that'll be just only bikini, only breast shots, only like bottom, only their butt. And you know what happens to these people? Because their page lacks dimension, their followers end up being only men, and they end up being weaker as influencers because influencing as far as that specialty, which is now like a very important marketing specialty almost, is a weaker position to be in because you alienate women and you only appeal to men. And honestly, just graphically, men don't buy anything.
Exactly.
So you can have your influencer post any amount of stuff. They're not there for that. They're for the boobs, and they're for, you know, like if it's very gratuitous.
Yeah.
And if that's all there is on that page, they're not there for like to buy anything or get tips on beauty tips or to be, you know.
It might get them likes, but it's not going to get them revenue.
Right. No. Exactly. And so I try to explain like you need to like have dimension. You need to have some of the things you know how to do. You need to have different clothing on, a different angle. Like, it's not always about just your sexual parts, but like your jawline, your lip, you know, like, well, lips are kind of sexy, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, that kind of thing. So like what you're saying is, again, to in my mind, the same idea that you want to have a sophisticated type of beauty and sexy, like you're capturing personality. And like, and that's what I see in your work. So you're
pretty
freaking talented.
I'm also very aware now that I have a daughter of, you know, the standard of beauty and people chasing that.
Right.
And just imagining what the world is like when my daughter is a teenager.
I think it'll be better.
Yeah, I hope so.
I think beauty is becoming a lot more inclusive.
I think so.
I think ageism is slowing down. It's not going away, but slowing down. And there's like this acceptance of different body shapes, different looks. And it's not just an acceptance verbally, but on the cover of magazines, on social media and things like that. So that when our kids are growing up, that's already normal to see that.
Yeah.
Whereas now, for some of the guys that are like in their 50s and 60s and they see Sports Illustrated and someone who isn't perfect is on the cover or perfectly thin, and they're like, what's that? You know, they're not used to that. That's not what their eyes trained to see.
Yeah.
That's their definition of beauty was a little is different.
Yeah.
And so as our kids grow up, I think, and they're seeing all these images in the media of different size, shape, whatever, and relatability is really important on social media and all that, I think it's going to be much better. And also, they're going to have better skin because you're putting sunscreen on them.
That's like, for sure.
The next generation is going to have like the best skin ever because they didn't fry themselves before age 15.
Yeah.
It's going to be really good. So the future in my mind is always bright, but then I'm kind of a Pollyanna, so.
Yeah.
That's why I got my name.
You're pretty positive.
I'm a positive person in general. Okay, so a couple things I have to ask every guest, or I want to ask. I want to know who inspired you. Did you have someone specifically inspire you to go into what you're doing, like your photography career?
It wasn't a specific person, though. But,
no. Do you have a mentor or someone that, real or imaginary, that you look up to?
So many people. But yes, I had a mentor in photography when I first started. I assisted a photographer up in San Francisco for a while and learned what to do and also learned what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of figured out, it's funny, when I got into photography, I was like, oh, I was still acting at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And my girlfriend at the time was a model, and she didn't have a car, so I was like driving her to her castings all the time and taking her to her photo shoots. And one time I was on a photo shoot and I was just watching what the photographer was doing, and I'm like, this is awesome. Like,
right.
It's so fun, and you're still storytelling, which is what I ultimately love.
Mm-hmm.
And I started taking pictures of her, and she would take those photos to her modeling agency and they'd be like, oh, who shot these? Who is the photographer? And she's like, oh, it's my boyfriend. He's got a camera from his uncle.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, can we start sending?
Can we book him with?
Yeah. And so I started shooting my girlfriend's friends. And then I just kind of like fell in love with that whole process. And yeah.
Love it. Did you know Mario Sorrenti? The famous photographer, he dated, who's that very thin model? Kate Moss?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So originally,
he
did a lot of photos with her originally. So it almost reminds me of that story of him photographing her. And that's where sort of that whole thing began with his style, with the wave style and all that.
Yeah.
So
I still have all those pictures too.
Oh, really?
They're so bad.
And they're bad. Now you look back, you're like, that was really bad. That's funny.
How did they? But yeah.
It's funny. Do you have a favorite inspirational quote?
Find what you're most afraid of and do that.
Okay. Find what you're most afraid of and do that.
That's Stephen Pressfield.
Uh-huh.
You know who that is?
Uh-uh.
He wrote, he's a writer. He wrote a book called The War of Art.
Huh.
And I just, that quote has always stuck with me because, like, every career that I've attempted to do is kind of a scary odds against you kind of thing. And so I always try to remind myself of that. I still do that. Like, now when I write a script and I send it out to people, I'm always like,
just go.
Let's just do it. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a lot of careers where there's a circumscribed path. Like, you have to do this and next, and then you have to do this next, and then this is the rules, and you have to follow these rules, and this is how you do it, and there's a standard way to do it. But anything artistic, like photography or screenplay writing or all that stuff, you're right. It's like open season to do anything you want, so it gives you less certainty and less rules,
yeah,
but also more freedom.
Exactly. And that, to me, is like the ultimate. I mean, my lifestyle is why what – has kept me excited about a lot of things, you know.
It's good. Are you ready to spin the wheel of guanche?
The wheel of guanche.
Well, it's like proprietary, but wheel of something. So are you ready to spin the wheel?
The wheel.
Okay, I'm going to hold it. Here? Secret stuff. You got to spin and then I'll tell you.
Okay.
I'm so mean, huh? You are so mean. We got a few categories. term definition. What's so mean. Okay, spin again. Okay. Do you want to do a term definition?
I don't even know what that is.
Okay, term definition. I'm going to say a word, and you're going to say what you think that word means.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be a dermatology word.
Okay.
How about lupus profundus?
We should probably spin again.
Okay, spin again. Free association.
Okay.
Okay, free association. Were you supposed to show these pictures? Okay, free association. Oh, he didn't land on it. That's why we didn't do it. Okay. I'm getting it now. I'm getting my own podcast. Okay. It takes me a minute. Okay, selfie.
Wait, what am I supposed to do?
So that means like I say one word in free association, and you say the first word that comes to mind. You don't have to give a description. You just say first word that comes to mind.
Gotcha.
Social.
Okay. Candid.
Love.
Confidence.
Sexy.
That's the word that came to my mind.
Yeah.
Lights.
Camera action.
Flash.
Glitz and glam.
Glitz and glam. How about wet? Who wrote these words? It wasn't me. But you still have to answer it.
Surfing.
Wet. She did it. Okay, ocean.
Love.
Love. Sunset.
Cheesy.
Cheesy?
Cheesy. I don't know why.
I love sunsets. Malibu.
Fun.
Fun. Trends.
Lame.
I knew you were going to say that. That's funny. I guess I know you pretty well. All right, spin the wheel again. Let's see. One last thing.
All
right.
Oh, I broke it.
Jelly bean. I'm so excited. We got the jelly bean one. Bring them
over.
What's
the jelly bean? Oh, no. I'm hearing
Don't
oh no's
them.
Over there. What's the deal?
Okay. So this is called Bean Boozled. So you got to spin this wheel. Okay. And then you have to take the candy that looks like that. And it either tastes delicious or it tastes horrible.
Oh, no.
But spin the wheel. You have? Okay, so he landed on pomegranate or old bandage flavor. I'm so excited. It's this one, this
Which
red one?
One. This one?
Yeah. Is it an old bandage? Oh, no. Give him a napkin.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I didn't even know what an old bandage would taste like.
It actually is the perfect description.
Do you want another spin?
I'm scared to do another spin after that.
Last time they spinned again so they could get the sweet one. No, but you can't be guaranteed that you get a good one next time. So, okay, we'll leave you with. Are you okay?
I'm good. Oof, okay. Gotta walk that off though.
Oh, wow. You need some water?
That's a bandage, all right.
What I'm dying to see what that tastes like. I think I might.
That's the thing.
I have to do one too, even though it's even though it's got carbs in it. Okay, so this
are you
one,
a no carb?
No carbs.
No.
Birthday cake versus dirty dishwasher. Can I spin again?
Rules are the rules.
No. Do you hear how fast? Everyone's like, nope. Okay, this is the one. Ready? Ew.
Really.
Oh,
see, I was picturing all your happy neighbors waving at you, and I'm like, the luck is just on your side.
That's a dirty dishwasher. Boy, they really nailed it. Ooh, that's the worst.
Take a whiff of the box.
Out of the box.
How do they do that? It's actually impressive.
How did they do that? Horrible.
Disgusting, yeah.
I love this game. Okay, so... We'll save this for the next victim. Well, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. On that note, I'm going to go brush my teeth.
You guys should follow Ashley Barrett on Ashley Barrett Photography at Ashley Barrett Photography on Instagram. And your website is the same, right? Ashley Barrett Photography?
It's ashley-barrett.com.
Oh, ashley-barrett.com. And you'll see a lot of the photos he did on my Instagram at AnnaGuancheMD. Pretty much all of them lately are from you. And I appreciate that very much.
I'm grateful for it too.
And thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, babies.